You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Aveller.
Hello and good day. This is Rick Franzi, and welcome to the 65th installment of Critical Mass, the radio show. I'm excited to be here. I was just here yesterday on the 64th installment, and I'll be here next week for the 60-something installment. Doug and I will be hosting our shows next week. As you know, our loyal listening audience, and for those who don't know, maybe new to the show, my business partner Doug Gefeller and I co-host this business talk show, and it does air Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday live at 4 p.m. here in the beautiful studios of octalkradio.net, the premier business talk radio station in Orange County, California, serving not only the County of Orange, but the world, actually, being by virtue of the technology, being on the Internet. Our goal with this show, which is just a small offering on this vast network of business news talk shows, is really to help business owners and top executives to make better, more informed decisions. And the way we do that is by exposing you here in these interviews to thought leaders and executives who have what we term transferable knowledge and ideas. Today is no exception. We have a very interesting guest, and we'll be getting to Greg Winston in a moment, and we'll do an introduction in a minute. But right now, I just want to say that this radio show is an extension of our 15-year business practice, where Doug and I build forums for top executives and business owners, as I said, here in beautiful Orange County, California. We do that part of our business under the brand Renaissance Executive Forums, and Doug and I currently are leading multiple CEO peer groups here for the county based on a variety of different business interests, size, and experience of the business owner and top executive. We offer a differentiated experience for executives and business owners because our research shows that 80% of the issues and opportunities that a top executive faces are common with those issues and opportunities faced by other top executives who are currently leading similarly sized firms. Recently, my book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Power of CEO Peer Groups, was called the definitive guidebook to the CEO peer group experience. And if you're listening out there and you're saying, what is a CEO peer group and how do I experience it? Well, then I would suggest you do two things. You consider buying the book Critical Mass off of Amazon.com, or you attend one of our CEO peer groups that we hold on a monthly basis here in Orange County. I would strongly encourage you to check out our website, which is Critical Mass for Business. Critical Mass for Business. Everything we do, we brand as Critical Mass because Doug and I realize that the power that comes from a group of focused peer executives working together in a harmony to solve challenges, overcome obstacles, and find new solutions to business opportunities that are present in the marketplace. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there are quite a number of opportunities presented by this economic shift that we've had over the past 2 years, and we're helping, and they're helping each other find those and really to capitalize on them. So check out Critical Mass for Business. I'd like to turn my attention now to our first guest today, and as I mentioned earlier, it's Greg Winston. And Greg is a pioneer in the study of high performance in the area of sales. Since he founded sales2sales.com in 1998, his innovative ideas and methods have had a lasting positive impact on the careers of hundreds of marketing professionals. Companies at all levels use his seminars and training programs with proven tools for increased personal and professional success. Local and national sales teams use his luxury mindset research to understand how to better market and sell high-end products. I happen to be holding in my hand, as I sit here in the OC Talk Radio studios, a book recently published, I guess his latest book, Greg Winston's book, Opting for Opulence, the 14 Proven Strategies to Master Selling in the Luxury Market. So, without any further delay, let's bring our first guest on today. It's Greg Winston. And Greg, how are you today?
I am great. And how are you?
I couldn't be better, thank you. And I am looking forward very much to the next half hour that we have together to talk about what you understand so well, which is the selling process and marketing and helping firms to improve in that area. But before we do that, first question I'd like to ask you, Greg, is if you could take a few minutes and tell our audience about your path to your current firm.
Oh, yeah. I'll start with how I got started, and that was with a small company at the time called Xerox. And I started with Xerox right out of college, and I was lucky enough to get on. And I say lucky enough because being with Xerox has shaped everything I've done in business since that time. I rose fairly quickly through the branch using some of the principles that I'll talk about today and some that are in the book. But those principles helped me to get on track very quickly. Within 1 year, I was leading the branch in sales. So that kind of got the attention of everyone. I went on to do some training within Xerox, and that got me even more attention. And later, I was recruited by CBS. And I started working with CBS in broadcast sales, went into managed a couple of stations for them, which then took me to Warner Brothers. And I think that throughout all of this, I've had the good fortune of having a great sales team, managing great teams, and then using the principles that I've learned in that regard to further what I'm doing in my business and help other companies to achieve their goals in sales. And that's about the run of it. And I started my company, Greg Winston, Inc., about 9 years ago. And in that time, we've worked with companies as large as Boeing to companies as small as mom and pops. But all of them had the one thing in common, that is they were trying to improve their sales, get more revenue in.
So Greg, take me back 9 years ago when you decided that the world needed another, if you will, a sales training company, and with your expertise. What did you see in the market that caused you to believe that you could build a successful practice around what you knew?
Well, that's a great question. The thing that I noticed was that most companies that had sales training in place didn't change, but everything around them changed. So the sales training didn't keep pace with what was going on in the market. I came up with a plan to do ongoing research and convert what consumers were saying to us that would cause them to buy into sales training curriculum. So I didn't look at it so much as being just another. I looked at it as what can I do differently in the market that would get quicker traction and better results.
Well, that leads me to the next logical question, which is, let's talk about what it is that Greg Winston, Inc. does and how you differentiate your offering against others that offer something that a consumer or a client might consider to be an alternative to what you're doing in your practice.
Well, I think the first thing that I would need to talk about is our ongoing need for research. We feel like it's absolutely imperative that we research the market and use that information to write sales curriculum. So every quarter, we go through an exhaustive research project to understand what consumers are saying, what their buying habits are, and how we then take that information and turn it into curriculum is what separates us. In terms of how companies have worked with us, there are probably three areas. One is they use us to do the research and convert their sales curriculum for them. That's one. Another is companies will have me in particular come in and do a speech about sales or about motivation within their company. The third area has to do with sales coaching. The premise here, Rick, is I think that's important, is that there's so many managers out there that have come from the ranks of sales, and they got that position because they just happen to be good in sales, but they weren't skilled in management. And so there's a void when they come into that position. And I have found that the coaching and ongoing study of management has really helped us to make better managers out there in the marketplace.
That's As you know, Greg, from our conversations and as we've gotten to know one another in preparation for your appearance here today, I have an extensive background in sales, and I agree completely with you that many times the most successful individual salesperson is then asked to lead the team, and the skills that made that person the most successful individual salesperson may not be the skills that make that person a successful sales manager of other salespeople.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's sort of like taking the star quarterback off of a football team and putting him on the sidelines now, or and saying, "Okay, now you're the, you know, you're the head coach."
Yeah.
Those skills may not transfer to the sideline as well. So, the professionalization of the industry and the profession of being sales is something that I'm always interested in talking with thought leaders such as yourself about what's being done to help bring that level of skill up in the selling profession.
Well, I have to tell you, it reminds me of looking at amateur sports versus professional sports. You know, in the amateur ranks, we don't have to have a skilled sales manager, if you will. We can have almost all players. But when you graduate and your company hits a certain level, you have to have a really experienced leader that is a sales driver to make sure that you don't miss opportunities, to make sure that you keep a staff that's up and motivated, and you don't miss revenue.
You have to constantly be evaluating, is what got me here going to get me to the next level?
Absolutely.
Or do I need to change? And that sometimes is challenging in the area of sales because it's foreign. The concept of it is foreign to a lot of business owners and top executives because they've never been in the role as a professional.
Right. Okay. It is foreign to them.
Greg, I'd like to ask you, you know, we're going to be talking about your system and other areas of your expertise here in a moment. But before we embark on that conversation, just talk to the audience about, of all the things that you've learned, your particular experiences, is there a guiding principle or overarching philosophy that you use relative to running your firm and working with your clients?
Yeah, working with clients, and I think the main principle that guides us is a search for help. That when a client engages with us, they're actually looking for help in some area of sales. What we do is we define that area of help and deliver it. There was a time when I started the business, I really didn't realize what our value was. And I'd go through the mechanics of consulting. Now it's very clear to me that when a person calls on us, they have a problem, and they're looking for us to solve that problem pretty handily for them. And I describe that as help, that they need help in this particular area that happens to be our expertise. And with that, it gives us a lot of confidence as we work with people because it takes it from the realm of just consulting or just trying to work with people to actually providing a solution that's going to solve a specific issue for that client.
Do you find as well that, again, my bias is that successful salespeople are quite valuable, not only to the firm in which they work, because without them, you know, nothing happens really until the customer is engaged and starts to spend money with your firm. So they're important from that perspective. But my experience also is that truly successful and great salespeople want to help their clients, are there to find a problem that their company can genuinely solve and solve well, and then apply that solution to the customer's problem.
Yeah.
Is that similar to what you found in your experience?
It's very similar. And here's what's interesting about finding that help, that there's always a rhythm to it, that if it keeps repeating itself, if the problem keeps repeating itself, there's that rhythm to it. And what we try and do is diagnose, get to that rhythm, and find a solution so that it counteracts it. Rather than just placate it, it actually counteracts that rhythm that's taking them into a spiral downward. And when we correct that, we get the upward mobility. But it's, you know, Rich, it's so repetition a lot of the problems that clients have, that one of the first things we've noticed is rhythm. What is the rhythm of those problems? How often do they happen? And then we get to the root of them, and that's where our success comes from.
Could you give us an example of a time when you were working with a client, and based on the research and the work that you did, you were able to discover that rhythm and then give them a what sounds like a root cause solution to permanently change that problem?
Yeah. There's a major retailer, jewelry retailer here in the United States. The name is big. I won't mention any names, but they use blue boxes, if that rings a bell. And one of the things that we noticed right away is that the relationships that they were developing in the stores as we speak were not strong relationships. And what was really tough about that, Rich, is that in a tough economic time, there's an issue of trust that balloons, that people really need to trust in order to invest more. Well, without the relationship, there's no trust. So the moment a customer would walk into the store, the sales reps would typically ask three questions. Those questions were, may I help you? How are you? Is anyone helping you? Those are the top three questions. On the reverse side, our research showed that our consumers hated questions, and what they would prefer would be statements. And it actually came out of the research, this phrase, that friends make statements and strangers ask questions. So when we reversed that rhythm of those questions and got them to be more observant of what the client was wearing that they comment on, or if there's a particular stone that they saw or a watch, they would make a statement based on something that was close to the client. And at that point, they could then ask questions. And it reshaped how they started a relationship with a client as opposed to asking questions and pushing the client further away. Now, if you look at the number of times that a client walks in, that's a huge deal.
I'm sorry to talk over you, but that's a powerful learning moment that your research showed, because as you were explaining that, I was thinking and reflecting on my own experience in retail shops, and many times when I'm approached by a sales professional at that retail location, the first thing they're doing is starting to ask me questions, and many times I can connect with that. I see what you mean. It almost drives the point that you're strangers, because they're trying to start off by asking you something, and it I can see how that's very interesting. Thanks for sharing that example. I appreciate it. You know, what have you found in the 9 years that you've worked with businesses and top executives and business owners? But what have you found are some common misperceptions that these individuals have as it relates to, you know, managing a sales organization?
Well, I'll tell you that the biggest one for me is they tend to think that the sales team they have is permanent. And let's say, for example, they have 10 people on their sales team. The average is at about 20%. Two of those people will lead the team. The next six people will kind of be in the middle, and the final two will bring up the rear and won't do very well at all. Now, it's my belief that they need to get rid of the bottom two. And I've found, Rich, that it's very tough to tell a manager, look, you got to let some people go. It's tough because those people are on the baseball team, or they know their cousin, or any number of reasons that have nothing to do with getting more revenue in the door. But if they're able to let those two people go, it sends a message to the rest of the team that mediocrity will not be tolerated. And the top tier feels better because they look at the also-rans, or the people that are losers, as going against where they want to be. They want to be winners, and those people are losers. So one of the main things that I see is the resistance to change the team. They tend to look at teams as being permanent.
And as you're explaining that, I'm thinking of the analogy of pruning a tree. how cutting it back causes it to grow more healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also thinking about large companies like GE, who have for years focused on managing the bottom 10% of their organization and having HR systems not just in sales but across their company that
yeah.
allow them to recognize who isn't meeting expectations and then help them to, you know, relocate out of the company if they can't turn it around. And so I agree with you that is a challenge for business owners. When you come in your role of trying to help them to realize that, what do you say to them? How do you explain it? How do you begin to get them comfortable with this concept?
Well, the first thing I do is I make the money real. I will take the 10 desks, and I'll line up how much each desk is worth to them. Then I ask a simple question. If each desk is worth $1 million and you have 10 million, and you have two desks that are not performing, how likely would it be that you would leave $2 million unattended? It's not very likely at all. And what I try and get people to understand is that, one, they should be interviewing all the time, and two, if there are people on the team that are not performing, those people should not be there. What I'm trying to get to is a fresh, more vibrant team, and it's tough to do that if you're going to hold on to people who are not performing.
It resonates with me in that the top performers look to the manager and the owner to see if they are aware that they have top performers and they have people who aren't top performers.
Yeah.
And they respect, I think, the hard decisions that a manager or owner has to make by taking action against the people who aren't performing at the same level. So your earlier assertion that it's healthy for the team, I think, is completely accurate.
Yeah, it is. I love the tree example that you use. The pruning.
Do you have advice for business owners who see themselves as the company's best salesperson? And the reason why I ask you this is I have heard many times as companies have to grow past a certain ceiling,
mm-hmm.
sometimes my observation, and I don't do sales consulting, is that what you talked about earlier, they haven't redesigned their, you know, they almost, the belief that the sales organization is permanent reflects upon themselves too as, you know, well, I'm the best salesperson this company has, or I've tried to hire outside salespeople, but they just weren't able to be as effective as I am. And when I engage those conversations, I personally get worried for the business and the business owner, fearing that, they really haven't done it correctly because, frankly, they shouldn't be the best sales. Well, at some level, they're always going to be the best salesperson for the company because they're the owner.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be the most active salesperson for the company because that's going to limit the company. So could you talk to us a little bit about the advice you might give to a business owner who sees themselves as the best and most active salesperson?
Yeah, two things. One, if you're a business owner and you see yourself as a best salesperson, you need to change your role to teacher. Hire someone that you can pass those skills on to and get back to running the company and let them, that person, whoever that person is, sell and get the experience and get to the level that you were and go past where you were. Number two, in most cases where I've seen business owners be the best salesperson, it's because they had the wherewithal to cut the deal. That the sales rep doesn't have that autonomy, and so they can only go to a certain point. What I'm suggesting is, one, you train someone to do what you say you're best at, and number two, give them full autonomy. Let them know where the bottom line is and give them a range of where they can move to close the deal. But do not keep selling yourself and looking at yourself as the best salesperson. Your job becomes of multiplying yourself by getting other people who can perform at the level that you perform at. And if you train them right, they can do it.
It would be the same in my mind as sitting there and talking to a business owner who believes that she is the best engineer or the best machine operator. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to, for a company to to grow in all areas, and especially in the sales area, which is, again, so vital to a business's long-term success and growth. You've got to be able to do what I just heard you say, which I think is challenging, very challenging for business owners, because many times too, tell me if your experience is this, you know, they have that personal relationship with their clients that they've built over the years, you know, they've been in business, and it's sometimes hard for them to give up that relationship.
That's very true.
As well. Okay. You know, we talked in getting prepared for your interview today about the impact of social media and how is that changing the role of a sales organization within a firm. Would you share with the audience your view on that subject?
Well, I think it's probably in the top three in terms of importance and creating a great sales team or a great sales career. It's gotten to the point where you can use social media to extend your brand, to allow people to know who you are before you've met, and to sell through those channels. It's huge. One of the sites that I like in particular is LinkedIn. And it has to do with 6 degrees of separation, has to do with connections, but it is the site that I see that is the most dominant in terms of business application today. And if you're not on it and you call yourself a professional salesperson, you should be on it. And it's just one of the sites that I think is extending what we can do on the internet that will also help enhance our product sales or enhance our career.
Is it your experience as you continue to work with companies that their sales organization is effectively, one, on LinkedIn, and two, then effectively utilizing that tool to help to aid them in their job?
That they're not, well, my experience has been that they're not near enough on it.
Okay.
You know, and realize that it's only a few years old, but the word is certainly out there. I'm actually going to some training on it so I can become better at it. But I really, really invite companies to take a look at that. And believe me, I get no check from LinkedIn for saying this, but I just see them as being the strongest in terms of social media for business. And I really believe more companies should take advantage of that. Even if they don't like LinkedIn, there are other social media sites that I think could bring them value if they get on it and they you know, put their manifesto out there, if they're talking about their product, if they're helping people in the industry. It could be very big for them.
Greg, I alluded in the open to the fact that I'm here holding in my hands a copy of your book, Opting for Opulence, the 14 Proven Strategies to Master Selling in the Luxury Market. And as I've gotten to know you and I see how you're positioning yourself relative to your website as well, clearly you have expertise and experience in helping firms who are in the luxury market.
Yes.
But I also know that you are working closely with a broad range of firms beyond the luxury market as well.
That's true. And Richard, it has to do with the fact that more often than not, the people that we talk to are affluent. Whether they buy luxury products or not, their income level, their education level brings them into that arena of being affluent. And the truth of the matter is there are more educated buyers out there than there have ever been because of the internet. And so you have to sell to them differently. The book really talks about what my research has shown and hopefully how to make it simple if you want to improve top-line revenue. That's what the book is intended to do.
And since you've published it, what has been the response?
It's been good. Actually, it's been great in terms of the business community. A couple of weeks ago, we found out we made a list, meaning tracking book sales. There's a group called 1-800-CEO-READ, and we were number 18 or 19 on their list. So it shows that the book has a following in the business community, and that's what we're going to focus on over the next few months, just working with the business community.
And what are you finding through this current economy relative to the luxury market where you have deep experience? What have you seen the best practices of those firms who have adapted to and are being successful within this economy? What is your sense they're doing differently?
There are many things, but let me give you just a few of the ones that come to mind right away. In order to be successful in the luxury market, in the affluent market, you can't do it alone. That people are connected, and you have to work through those connections, whether it's 6 degrees of separation or using the Geary system that I talk about in the book, to connect with people, because it ties in with the second element, which is trust, that people are naturally more cautious during these economic times. And if you come in through a connection of theirs, there's a higher level of trust. The third thing that I found has to do with emotion, that when you really talk about affluent markets, they buy because they want to. I mean, they could get their product from, you know, 4 vendors, but they decide on a vendor because they want to. And in most cases, that want is emotionally based. So a good marketer, a good salesperson in the luxury field will know how to hit those emotional tabs and bring that out in order to make a sale. And that those three things have been really big in the market.
Interesting. And I'm sure that your skills in helping the luxury market succeed also translate in how you research and help other companies that are in other market segments.
Yes, it does. But, you know, you'd be amazed at the number of companies who thought they weren't in an affluent market, but their buyers are affluent. For example, there's a retailer that sells junior clothing or clothing for young people, and they brought me in to take a look at what was going on, and it turns out that about 60% of their sales are made to the parents of those kids, which ties into the luxury market, where they thought their market was young adults. It's actually baby boomers that they're selling to.
Interesting. You know, a few weeks ago, I interviewed a professor from Cal State Fullerton, Dr. Coley, who does a lot of work outside of the school in helping companies with their brand. And a part of his differentiation in his consulting practice is research and data-driven mm-hmm. decisions. And I'm hearing in our conversation what I believe from a sales perspective is a corollary, which is doing research and making data-driven decisions on how to, you know, make corrections on your selling process.
Yes.
Am I being accurate in my appraisal of your process and your practice?
No, yes, you are. And it, you know, Rich, I guess the best way to describe it, when I learned how to sell at Xerox, we sold a certain way. And as I moved on to CBS and Warner Brothers, I noticed that things were changing. The way that I sold at Xerox is not the way that I sold at CBS or Warner Brothers. And I really wish more companies would take a look at that. That if the economy has changed, what does that mean to you in terms of how you present your product or how you sell your product? And the best way to find that out is through research. Consumer behaviors tell it all.
And you have a system which you spoke about, the Geary system, which is covered in your book, Opting for Opulence. And I think you've touched on several of the elements there. And it really, as I reflected on what we talked about and looked through your book relative to your belief system and what I heard you say today as well, makes a lot of sense and is almost self-evident, which sometimes the best learning happens from those ideas that you go, oh, that's obvious, you know.
Yeah.
But until someone presents it to you in a way that you can comprehend it, it isn't obvious, you know. It's like that aha moment. But using your relationship system and to help drive your selling process and creating a relationship based on common relationships, if I'm paraphrasing your system a bit, correct me, but it seems to me to make a lot of sense, the personal element to the selling process, not just for luxury market, but for a wide swath of the marketplace.
Yes, and it's growing. As trust comes into question because of the economy, relationships become king. I was telling a group the other day, this is no time to be alone, that you want affiliations, you want to use your relationships. And here's the catch. The thing that I find is that most everyone has relationships, but few people know how to penetrate the relationship. And that, to me, is the test. How can you use the relationship to help your business and help that person that you have the relationship with?
Yeah, that is the key. You know, I want to thank you for just really scratching the surface on your book, as well as the expertise that you've honed over, you know, years of professional sales training in a variety of industries, and also now successfully leading your firm for 9 years. Is there anything else, Greg, about you or your firm organization that we've not talked about today that you would like to say?
I guess the main thing is, you probably have a lot of people that come on your radio station. I heard you talk about the number of times you do interviews, and I just wanted to say that when I look at the market, my views have changed so much over the last 9 years that what my company does is we try and help people who are having a problem with top-line revenue. And no matter what we say about the book or all the stuff that we've talked about today, that is the bottom line. And the way that my company does it, we research the people they sell to and make it easier for them to sell to those people.
Sounds pretty straightforward to me. If someone would like to buy your book or learn more about your business, where would you suggest they go to do that?
Well, I appreciate you asking. The book is now in a second edition, and it's also in paperback. And we have the second edition on my website, which is gregwinston.com. You could go to most Amazon, all these other sites to get the first printing of the book. But the second edition has been expanded, and we just got it the other day. So they can go to gregwinston.com and under books, order it there.
Okay, so one site, they can learn more about your business, learn more about you, purchase a copy or 10 copies of your book if they wanted to give it to their sales organization. And obviously, your contact information is available on your website as well.
Everything's there.
Great. Well, I know that you have been working with members of Renaissance Executive Forums and helping those business owners understand the sales process. I've gotten feedback from people who have participated in some of the sessions that you've held, and they were really impressed with the quality of the work that you did for them and the way that you helped them think about selling in a different way. So I can speak from experience. I wasn't able to attend that one session where I was talking to some members, but I know that they were very impressed with what you were able to do for them during that time. So on behalf of Renaissance Executive Forums as well and our members, I want to say thanks for giving your time to do that, Greg.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate all your comments.
Have a good day, my friend.
All right. Goodbye.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Okay. Goodbye. Goodbye.
That was Greg Winston of Greg Winston Incorporated, and I would suggest if you're a business owner or a top executive or a service professional who would like to understand what Greg has been doing for 9 years, I think opting for Opulence is a good, easy read that's really designed to help show you some proven strategies to help master selling. And I know he's positioned himself in the luxury market. I believe it has transferable learning through a variety of different markets. So hopefully the listening audience, and for those of you that are listening to this on a podcast after the show is aired live here on octalkradio.net, will go out and do some basic research if you're interested in moving your top line north and professionalizing your sales organization, because clearly with basic training at Xerox and moving from there, that's very foundational sales training that Greg got early in his career. You know, it was a key thing that I heard Greg say both today and I know that he speaks about when he talks directly to business owners and consults, and that is the power of the researching your customers' beliefs, attitudes, so that you can better position yourself to help them, not to trick them, to help them, to understand where their pain points are and how you might be, how your company's service or product might be able to address that. And I believe that is very powerful. The customer listening activity in many companies isn't robust. Many times it's not systematized. And also, it doesn't have the impact at the strategic level. It is more of a tactical. And sometimes, through robust customer listening systems and practices, companies hear things they don't want to hear, or at least don't initially like hearing. And possibly that can affect the appetite to do additional customer listening. Hopefully that makes sense to those that are following the logic. And what Greg said, and in my experience and other people that we've had on the show here in the past, and we're certainly going to have in the future, the power of social media is a two-way street for communication. It allows you to speak your message in a consistent voice to a variety of constituents, both existing customers, past customers, and future customers potentially. But it also gives you the opportunity to get real-time, unfiltered feedback from those same constituents in an effort to really understand how you might position yourself as a better partner to them and help them. And so, you know, having a professional come in and help build a customer listening to address your sales process is powerful. As a business owner or top executive, making sure your firm is positioning itself for dialogue using social media with people like Rachel Perdon of Indira Marketing, who we had on earlier this year. Doug interviewed Rachel. You probably remember that. If not, go back in the archives and find her conversation relative to social media. And then also what we've talked about previously here on the show, which is the part of our practice here at Critical Mass for Business, which is our customer advisory boards, where we help you to institutionalize and systematize at a strategic level the voice of the customer inside of your business so that you're constantly growing and evolving with them and discovering additional services or products that you might be able to offer that they, in fact, would like to buy from you if you only knew it or could deliver it. Very powerful opportunities for companies to open up their ears at a variety of different levels in order to be the company that understands, because they have a relationship with their clients, both past, present, and hopefully future clients, which allows them to more easily grow their business, because it takes some of the guesswork about how do I add new revenues next year that we didn't have this year. So I'm very hopeful that 2010, for not only the members, the active members in our executive forum, CEO peer groups, but also our coaching clients that Doug coaches, as well as the clients that we're working on doing strategic planning, where we come in and help our clients not only take a strategic look at next year's revenue and growth, but also out years so that they can successfully plan a multi-year growth strategy to improve their business and continue to move it forward. There is a lot of opportunity from my perspective working with a large number of companies here in Orange County in a variety of different industries, presented to companies that are looking and aware of what those opportunities might be. And some of them aren't obvious, but yet the better your customer listening skills and the more you're searching for and in dialogue with the market, the more readily apparent those opportunities become to companies that are in tune. So I was excited to have Greg on the show today. I felt very strongly that his research-based coaching practice is important in the area of sales, You'll probably remember that we've had other professional salespeople like Cameron English of English Technical Sales on, where we talked about the work that's being done by individuals to really continue to advance the profession of selling, because it's so vital to companies, especially in times like these. And as we begin to turn the corner here next year and continue to see the economy changing, the sales function is a critical function, as are engineering and manufacturing and quality and finance, etc. Public relations, my God, who can live without a strong public relations organization to work with? It's been another exciting show for us. I want to call your attention that next week we have two shows, one on Wednesday and one on Thursday. We will be having a replay of one of our episodes from earlier this year here on octalkradio.net. Strongly encourage you to go out into the archives in a variety of different ways to see the past shows and find the guests that we've had that may be of interest to you, because we're covering a broad spectrum of business topics in the show here on Critical Mass on the premier business talk radio station in Orange County, octalkradio.net. And I'm really looking forward to finishing 2009 strong on the station, and really what we're going to be doing next year in 2010, because just like anything, the more you work at it, the better it gets. And for me, the harder we work on this show, the more the ideas keep coming back. And what I'm finding is the more that we give to the community by virtue of this show, the more that Doug and I at Critical Mass for Business are getting back from the community. So it's quite rewarding. Do me a favor, tell two friends about Critical Mass for Business and the radio show, as well as octalkradio.net. Hey, my producer says tell three. So two was under spec. So do what my producer says here in these beautiful studios, octalkradio.net. Have a great day, and look forward to talking to you again on a future episode. And until I talk to you again, here's hoping that all your business decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You're listening to Positively the Best Show on the best station, Critical Mass, on octalkradio.net.